my mother was a gardener. She had picked cotton in the South. And every spring when she began her garden there in Grand Rapids, you know, Michigan has that rich black dirt, great rich black dirt. And as the winter started to give way, right before it started to get actually really warm, but warm enough so that the ground was softer, my mom would go out and take all the weeds out of her garden. Have us do that, take all the weeds out, and then as a proper gardener would do, she would wet her dirt, you know, of top to bottom, and then she'd work the soil to make sure it's all nice and soft. And when she got her garden ready, she would tell me, "Willie, come on out here in the dirt with me." And I'd go out into the dirt with her, and she'd say, stick your hands down the dirt." And she'd make me stick my hands into the dirt down to my elbows. That's how soft she had gotten it, down to my elbows. And she'd have her elbows almost up to her shoulder, up to the almost to the end of her shoulders in that dirt. And she would turn to me and say, "You feel that? You feel that, son? That's life. That's life."
We are of the dirt. That's what Willie Jennings believes. He grew up on the southeast side of Grand Rapids. Now he's a scholar at Yale Divinity School. And he says dirt is important to the understanding of each other as people because dirt is what joins us in the first place. We may have differences, but we have the land in common. And what do we learn about ourselves when we look at our land? Well, that's a question our reporter Dustin Dwyer has been thinking about a lot. This week, he brings what he found. We're calling this An Idea on the Land, a story in four parts. Part one, look about you.
You know that saying we have in Michigan, if you seek a pleasant peninsula, look about you? Forget about what you're seeking for a minute. Just wherever you are, look about you. If you're in a building, look at the walls. If there's a window, you can look out the window, look at the trees, the grass, the parking lot, the land. Just about everywhere in Michigan, even out in nature, you can see how humans have changed things. You can see our ideas inscribed on the land. The most noticeable one is our idea about property. We hardly even think about property. It just is. Sure, a person can own a piece of the earth. Just imagine a line. Imagine a rectangle sitting there. Everything inside that rectangle is yours. Take that dirt. Do whatever you want. It's yours. But that idea came from somewhere. It has a history. All the ideas we live with about our land, they came from somewhere. And a lot of them haven't even been here that long.
If you were here in 1817, Michigan would have seemed an entirely indigenous space. It was dominated by Native peoples who lived in Detroit, Mackinac, in the Grand River Valley, in the Upper Peninsula. And anywhere you went, you would have encountered Native people, and it would have been Native people who are continuing to living as their ancestors had done.
Michael Witkin is a historian. He's a member of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and he's written about the history of Native people in the Great Lakes in the time after Europeans arrived. A lot's happened in that period, but some people missed it in history class.
The biggest thing that they miss is that we're still here, that there's still a significant Native population in the state of Michigan. There are 14 reservations, 14 communities. So that's the biggest thing.
But not the only thing they miss.
The next biggest thing is a kind of misconception that when the territory that's now Michigan gets claimed by New France, that it's suddenly actually a part of New France, that it's dominated and controlled by Europeans, when in fact, really, it's still entirely a Native space.
There just weren't that many Europeans for hundreds of years. They had little villages in Detroit, in Fort Mackinac, in Sault Ste. Marie, not much else. They saw the rest of the land of Michigan as unsettled wilderness. Unsettled even though there were thousands of people on it, people with political systems, economic systems, agricultural systems.
But from a European standpoint, because it's not been carved up into individual farms that are fenced and have built structures, for them, that means it's a wilderness.
A wilderness to be taken and tamed. And we all know that this happened. The Europeans came in, they did what they did. But why did they see the land that way? And why did they see Native people that way? The ideas came from somewhere. Willie Jennings says a big part of those ideas came from the Europeans' distorted understanding of the Bible.
They came believing that they were the people of God, having replaced Israel as the people of God. And so that God's hopes for the world rested on them.
Them. It was also important who they believed they were and who other people were not. They were the white people. And that combination, Christianity plus whiteness, shaped the New World, Jennings says. He's studied and written about this history a lot. He wrote a book called The Christian Imagination, Theology and the Origins of Race. And Jennings says whiteness should not be thought of as a person or as a group of people. No one is born white, he says. It's an idea, a way of being in the world. And at first, it was a harmless way for the Europeans to designate people in a land where not everyone looked the same.
And what began as really harmless designation soon took on a world of harm as they did one crucial thing with their life in the New World. They seized land.
And why did they seize it? Because they believed it was already theirs as white people, the chosen people of God.
And so they helped to create a new vision of the world as not only a possession given by God, but as infinitely possessible, i.e. individual, private ownership of the world itself.
Private ownership of land. That idea we don't always think about, but that shapes our entire experience of the land. Jennings says it even shaped the history of why so many Europeans came to the Americas. Because here it was possible for common people to be landowners, not just tenants of the aristocracy. That hope of ownership is what brought many Europeans to the shores of the New World. And you can see why it would be so tempting.
You know, imagine coming to Michigan. You're staring out at the majesty of Lake Superior. And the beauty of the trees and the fruit and the animals. And of course, there are people. And someone whispers to you, all this is yours. All this is yours.
That was from a reporter, Dustin Dwyer. Tomorrow, the series continues with the story of the Supreme Court case that set the precedent for indigenous property rights in the U.S., the case of Johnson versus McIntosh, tomorrow on our series, An Idea on the Land.